This is an interview with Dr. Henry Allen Parker. Today's date is October 21st, 1976. Dr. Parker, you were on a committee that was appointed by the trustees to investigate the possibility and feasibility of beginning a separate school of religious education at Southern Seminary. And I'd like to talk with you just a little bit about your recollections of that committee and how you felt about the work that was done. Do you know if there was any particular reason that you or any of the others were asked to serve on that special committee?
Steve, there was no special reason for it. Of course, I was on the Board of Trustees. As a matter of fact, I have the distinction of having served, I suppose, as long as anybody's ever served, and that was because of changing of states and filling unexpired terms. But I came on the board right shortly after Dr. Ellis Fuller became the president. And when this matter came up for discussion, according to my recollections, the chairman of the board simply appointed a committee from the board. See, up until that time, there was just the one board.
Right.
Since then, there have been three different divisions of the board, which I will talk about in a moment. But then, it was just one board of trustees. So it was just a special committee to make the study.
Do you remember what year that committee was appointed? Was it around 48 or 49?
About that time, I wouldn't be absolutely, couldn't be absolutely sure because I just don't remember and I have not checked the records on it, but it was about that time.
Do you remember how long the committee worked?
For 2-3 years total, we made a study and then of course from that study came the recommendation.
Yes.
But it was over a period of time, it wasn't just all of a sudden.
What were the issues that were of concern to this committee as it considered the advisability of separating a school for religious education?
I suppose that there were 2 or 3 very important matters. One of them was the fact that traditionally the Louisville Seminary, especially under the presidency of Dr.
Mullins?
No, Sampi. John R. Sampi, especially under Dr. Sampi, concept was that Louisville Seminary was a school of the prophets, that it was designed specifically to train preachers. And that had been true, of course, through the years, but Dr. Sampi was very staunch in this attitude. So to make a change from that was a rather difficult thing to do. The general feeling was the other seminaries have schools of music and schools of education, but let Louisville continue to serve as, well, as the great school for preachers. And I well remember Dr. Sampi setting a goal just about the time of my graduation for 500 preachers to be in Louisville Seminary. See, we'd been going up for a number of years, a few more and a few more, and his goal was to see 500 there at one time. Well, of course, we all know what's happened since that time, but at least that was the goal, and I feel that this was one of the major barriers in the way.
Uh-huh. What were any other reasons or issues?
One of the other issues, as I remember, was that our faculty was limited, that these men were specifically trained in the field of theology, that is to, you know, to educate preachers, and that it would require a vast expenditure of money, which some felt we could not afford at the time, to create a separate school and then bring in new faculty members and start in a different direction. So that was a barrier that we had to overcome.
Of course, Dr. Dobbins was on the faculty. Was he seen as a theology professor or was he seen as a religious education, quote unquote, professor?
I would say that he was considered to be a member of the school of theology because he was teaching some of those subjects that, well, that every preacher had to take. in preparation for his ministry. And the courses were varied, and he just happened to be in the area where he was teaching religious education and related subjects. But there was not a feeling, a strong feeling, that we needed a large separate school of education as such, to train educational directors, in other words.
Yes, right. Do you remember any active opposition for this idea among the trustees, or and the nature of that opposition by the trustees themselves?
Not a great deal. That is, as far as my memory serves me, I think I have already mentioned really the major opposition, and it was at the point of financing it, and the wisdom, also the wisdom of getting into a different area, feeling that we could not put the kind of emphasis on the training and development of prophets, of preachers, that the school ought to be doing. And it seems to me that that was a major thing with some of them.
Do you feel that the faculty and the administration was influencing the trustees at this point more than the trustees were influencing the faculty?
As to the development of a separate school?
Right. In accordance with this attitude about this being a school of the prophets?
I think perhaps a lot of the pressure really came from the trustees. Now, it's quite true that Dr. Dobbins and a very small, well, of course, we didn't have a large faculty to begin with, but Dr. Dobbins and one or two others felt that this was the direction we ought to take. Now, the pressure came largely from the trustees who are out in the field all over the convention. And they felt at the time that what we needed to do was to train, Louisville Seminary ought to train men for education and for music who would have the same approach and the same understanding as the preacher who attended the Louisville Seminary. There were problems that developed, and I think this had a great deal to do with it, so that there would be, a better relationship and understanding, both having gone to the same school,
yes,
so to speak.
Well, I've kind of gathered from my research that Dr. Fuller was very actively in favor of training men in religious education as a separate vocation because of his experience as a pastor at First Baptist Church Atlanta. For the same reason, he seemed to be very much in favor of the School of Music, which actually got started earlier. Is this an accurate assumption?
Yes, Steve, I think this is absolutely true, and I remember that Dr. Fuller came out very strongly for these separate schools. He felt like that the Mother Seminary, and it is the first, you know, it's the oldest, and the Mother Seminary of Southern Baptists, that it ought to do a complete job. That we ought to be in the field of training not only preachers, pastors, but also missionaries, denominational workers, educational workers, youth workers, music directors, and so forth. That it ought to be a total package, because a team, as I said a moment ago, a team developed under that kind of leadership and with the same understandings and goals would be in a position to do a much more effective job on the field. So that was sort of behind the whole thing.
I see. This is a question that I had not anticipated asking, but your comments have brought this up. The WMU School, or as it later became called, the Carver School of Missions and Social Work, was there and training, I guess, mostly women with Master of Religious Education degrees. Was there any conflict between the seminary itself beginning to offer a Master of Religious Education degree and the Carver School offering this same degree that you were aware of as a trustee?
Steve, I vaguely remember something in this connection, but really I don't recall enough to be able to comment about it. I was there when the transition was made, that is, as a trustee. You know, House Beautiful used to be downtown,
yes,
Louisville, And you're quite right. It was distinctively a school for women, for young ladies. And then it was moved to the adjacent location right by the seminary where the buildings currently stand. And then eventually, because of the overlapping and the use of the professors, after we got started with the School of Education and Music and the missions and social work and all these things, it became for us to try to maintain two separate schools. Uh-huh. And so that entered into the changeover.
Yes. Of course, Dr. Edge was on the faculty at that time, too, when this committee was doing its study. Do you remember any of Dr. Edge's attitudes toward this? You've said Dr. Dobbins was very much in favor of it. And a couple of other professors. Was Dr. Edge one of these?
Dr. Finley Edge was. Now, point out specifics, I can't do this, but I do recall that he was very much in the limelight in the movement. Uh-huh. And I remember his meeting, Dr. Dobbins and Dr. Edge, meeting with our committee in its studies and in its recommendations.
You've talked about some of the issues that were involved, and I wonder if this question may be irrelevant, but were there any what we might call primarily persuasive factors that were involved here that finalized the decision? Were these factors people, or was it the concept of actually training those ministers together at the same seminary? Which would you say would be the biggest factor in actually reaching the decision to do this?
I believe that the biggest factor, now this is my own personal opinion.
That's fine.
Without due, considerable thought on it. I believe that the decisive factor was the clamor from the grassroots, from the field, for Louisville trained educational directors and music, ministers of music. Uh-huh. I think that was really the deciding factor. Because more and more we heard this, that we ought to be training more than just preachers.
Another question I had not anticipated, but I'd like you to reflect on this if you have any ideas about it. Do you feel that there was any sense of competitiveness with, say, Southwestern Seminary, which had a very large school of religious education at the time, a sense from Southern itself feeling as though it had to keep up with what Southwestern was doing?
I did not really get that feeling. I'd say that there was some, feeling of competitiveness out in the field, and I heard some of this.
I see.
In other words, the men from the other seminary were asking, well, why are you getting into this? You'll never be able to compete with the kind of school we have and this sort of thing. But I don't believe it was any major barrier. I don't think there was any great argument about it.
You wouldn't say then that was a major factor as to why Southern considered starting?
No, sir, I really do not.
Okay, very good. Because I had kind of wondered about that. Now, there was a move to start a school of religious education early when Dr. Fuller came. He began early to talk to the faculty, as I found from letters and correspondence, all sorts of printed material, that he was talking about specific training for men in religious education and specific training for men who would be vocationally going into church music back in the early 40s when you came on the trustees. Did this ever come to the trustees?
After a period of time it did. Of course, I would not be knowledgeable at all as far as his conversations with faculty would be concerned. Not until it came to the floor of the trustees and we began to discuss it. And as I recall, he was the one who introduced the subject the first time.
Uh-huh. And so this was a gradual thing.
Just a gradual thing.
Rather than
right.
than really being turned down once and coming back
this
up again.
Right.
I see.
Right.
Very good. You've answered this in a way, but I'd like you to specifically speak to this. How influential do you believe that the seminary presidents were in getting this school set up? Now, you've talked a little bit about the influence of Dr. Sampi, and you've talked a little about the influence of Dr. Fuller. I'd like you to include, if there was any influence from Dr. McCall as the new president, or from Dr. Dobbins as the interim president, because the decision was made after he was interim president and then went back to being dean, or really went to being the back in the School of Theology and then eventually went to be dean of the new school.
Mm-hmm.
This committee, as I understand it, was functioning all that time.
Mm-hmm.
What influence do you believe the presidents themselves had on this total decision? And you can even go back to Dr. Mullins if you want to.
Well, of course, I don't really don't know what Dr. Mullins' attitude and stance was. But yes, I would say they had a decisive influence, Steve, especially after Dr. Fuller. Of course, Dr. Fuller, you know, was very untimely, we think, taken.
Yes.
But that's in God's hands. But then when Dr. Dobbins, who already was so very outspoken on this issue, became the interim president, naturally things began to gel. And then Duke McCall just stepped right in and fit right in with this concept. And incidentally, you remember that Duke McCall was formerly president of the New Orleans Seminary. And New Orleans was already into this field to a degree, not to the extent that Southwestern was.
Yes.
But New Orleans also had a great deal of religious education and music work. So it was a natural then for Duke McCall, when he came, to just take up and go right ahead with the idea. And it was soon after that, as I remember, that the decision was definitely made. I don't recall the exact date right now.
Let me ask you finally to recollect something that occurred after your committee had done its job. Your committee's job, as I understand it, was to bring a recommendation, and then the committee was dissolved after your recommendation was presented. When it was all over with and the school had gotten started, during the time that it was just being begun and as it was getting started, what do you feel faculty response to this was and student response was to the start of the school?
I had a feeling that the response was very good. Naturally, again, it was a development. It was a process. It was not accepted 100% on the part of the faculty or the students, because there were a lot of the students still who were there to study the ministry, that is, as pastors, and they just felt like we were watering down our efforts. That is, some of them did. But on the other hand, it was welcomed by a large group for reasons that I've already pointed out. So at first, it was more for the training and the development of some of the preachers who were already enrolled at the seminary before it actually began to develop them as a separate school with men coming there who felt that their life's vocation was to be totally in education or totally in music. So it was a little slow process, and the school was small at first, of course, but has become a very strong and acceptable department now.
Looking back on it over the years, do you feel that the decision that was made has in any way hurt seminary as being a strong school for the prophets?
Frankly, on the contrary, I think it has greatly strengthened it, Steve, is my feeling, because it has given a broader base for training, even of the preacher. But at the same time, it has put him in the classroom with the educational director and with the music director, so that side by side they have studied and grown and developed together. The school has become stronger, and I use that term instead of just saying larger. It has become stronger, in my opinion, so that the products that are put out by the Louisville Seminary now, I think, are far better trained than they were in the day when it was just a school of the prophets. And I have to classify myself there because I graduated from the seminary when it was just a school for preachers. But I believe that today, as I look back on it, that it was a very wise move, and I think God was in it.
Thank you very, very much, Dr. Parker. I certainly appreciate this interview. And do you have any difficulty with my reproducing any part of this interview?
Not the least. Be glad for you to do it, sir.
Thank you so much.